1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show. And on Thursday, we broadcast live from the Museum of Television and Radio in Los Angeles. And this is a week-long celebration they're having over there, honoring radio. Okay. Taiwanese officials say that at least 65 people died when Los Angeles-bound Singapore Airlines flight 006 crashed during takeoff in stormy weather in Taipei late today. That would be Taipei time or Taiwan time. James Boyd, who's an airline spokesman in Los Angeles, said that according to the latest information available from the crash site, 75 people on board this Boeing 747-400 were unaccounted for. There's possibility that the plane encountered some storm conditions. Art Griego joins us from his home in Santa Monica, California. I'm going to talk to Art this hour about flying and about yet another air disaster, Art.
Yeah, absolutely, Phil. The other thing is it's another air disaster. As fate would have it, we've got another air disaster on Halloween.
When was the Egypt Air? That was a year ago, wasn't it?
The Egypt Air was a year ago. That's right, Phil. And I had, boy, I'll tell you, I thought I'd put that one to rest because I remember for months after Egypt Air went down, I talked to my wife, and I can remember just being alone in my office, and I was typing some memos, and I had some work to get done, and then I would stop, and just out of the blue, I would say, why were they flying on Halloween? And I, you know, so many people who don't understand.
Is there a statistic you had relative to Halloween flights?
Yeah. It's crazy. 37% fatalities in air disasters occur more. 37% more fatalities in air disasters occur on Halloween than the rest of the year.
All right. Now, before we get into anything crazy here, we're not saying that there's anything inherently wrong with Halloween. It's just you're saying that flying on Halloween's a little unsafe, right?
I think, Phil, it's a little more than unsafe. I think that pilots can be a little bit worried about things. You know, let me tell you this. I don't believe in goblins. I don't believe in ghosts or anything like that. But here you are on Halloween. You've got 350 souls that you're responsible for. You're looking at about a 16-hour air leg. Maybe you've had some sleep. Maybe you're a little tired. You know it's Halloween. Ordinarily, you wouldn't believe in crazy things, but are you willing to take the chance that on this night of nights, you might suck a witch or a vampire into that engine turbine? Are you willing to take that chance that a gremlin's on the wing? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay, let's slow down for a minute here, okay?
No, but do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't.
Well, what I'm trying to say to you is that...
You don't believe that witches are flying around?
No, I do not. Of course I don't, but I'm saying... When you're flying on Halloween, you know you've got a high percentage of air fatalities. What are you thinking?
What am I thinking?
Yeah.
I guess I'm thinking I better be careful.
Of course, but then what's the other thought?
All right, if you're asking me, am I worried that I'm going to suck a vampire into
You don't know. I'm going to tell you a little story, Phil, and just...
I can safely say, and I'm not a pilot, and...
That's a key phrase. Say that again.
I'm not a pilot.
Okay, that's a key phrase. I want you to remember that. You are not a pilot, so you don't really know.
But I'm going to say this anyway. There's no vampires or witches that are going to get sucked into an engine turbine.
Okay, and I'm with you on that, and I agree with you on that. What I'm saying is, on Halloween, if you're a pilot and you're afraid and you know that there are more fatalities on Halloween, why take a chance?
Why take a chance of what? Of sucking a witch into the engine?
Why wouldn't you stay grounded?
No. Answer my question, okay?
Why wouldn't you stay grounded?
No, answer my question. Why take a chance of what?
I'm saying to you that it's Halloween. You're not a pilot, so you don't know what we're going through here. You got a witch, a god. I don't know, Phil. I'm worried. I feel for these people. I'm trying to come up with some answers.
All right, well, if we're trying to come up with some answers for Singapore, for the Singapore air jet that went down, I think we need to stop at they sucked a goblin into their engine, and let's start talking.
Phil, I'm doing that. What I'm trying to say to you is a pilot's mindset.
Okay, well, from a pilot's mindset, if he's worried about a goblin getting sucked into the engine, what do you think about that?
What I'm saying to you is... I would rather stay grounded than take the chance. Let me tell you a story, okay?
Well, you still haven't answered my question.
Let me just tell you a story. It's a little story, Phil, about a B-17.
Well, hold on. Let me give the phone number here. We're talking with Art Griego about Singapore Air. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Art Griego is a pilot. You did fly commercially, right, Art?
That is correct.
And now you are flying basically privately. And we are talking about the Singapore Air jet that crashed. Singapore Airlines Flight 006 crashed during takeoff. It was Los Angeles bound. It was United States bound at the time of the crash. All right, you have a story.
I've got a little story here about a B-17. And it was in flying out of San Diego, 1941. All hell broke loose on Pearl Harbor.
On what?
On Pearl Harbor. The pilot of the plane and the crew were directed to Guam. They could not land at Pearl. The Japanese were bombing Pearl. They could only refuel on Guam. Once they landed, they were directed to take off immediately, get the hell out of there, because the Japanese were also closing on Guam with a fairly significant flotilla and with a fleet of fighter jets, fighter planes, I should say. So they went on to Manila. No sleep, 16 hours of flying. Let me tell you what happens to a pilot, Phil, when he's had no sleep and he's been flying for about 16, 17 hours. You start to see things, and one of the things that you see are what we call little manner gremlins.
Okay, I know that.
You know that from hearing a lot of World War II flyers, right?
That's correct.
All right. This pilot made the decision, as he looked out on the wing and he could see gremlins fooling with the engine, he made a decision. He had nine crewmen that he was responsible for. B-17, Flying Fortress, complement, nine men. He had nine men he was responsible for. He made the decision. He could see gremlins messing with the engine.
Okay.
They bailed out, and they sent that B-17, that's about $4 million worth of machinery, World War II dollars, they sent that B-17 into the Pacific. A PB-4 patrol plane picked him up about 2 hours later. He saved the lives of his crewmen. He made a split decision. He made a split-second decision.
All right, now, hold on.
I want to tell you the name of that guy.
Okay.
The guy's name was Colonel Jack Griego, United States Air Force. He was my father. And I am proud of him, and you bet I am proud of him. I would have flown that distance in service to my country, and you bet I'm not going to believe that nine men thought there was a gremlin on the wing. They'd been flying a long time. They were tired. It was common for flyers to claim they were seeing things. Why tempt fate?
All right. The story you just told me is your father, and God bless him, and his service to our country.
Thank you.
Took a perfectly good B-17 and sent it into the Pacific Ocean.
What?
Thinking that there were gremlins on the wing, screwing with the engine, and...
He saved the lives of nine men, Mr. Hendry. And
I understand that he had nine crewmen. That was the Flying Fortress B-17. He'd been directed out of Pearl. Obviously, they wanted to keep that plane in action for the war.
Yeah, that's correct. But what was he going to do? Kill men? Kill them?
How are they going to die?
He was seeing things. He was seeing gremlins on the wing. They were getting into the engine compartment.
Gremlins were getting into the engine? I can understand that he was so tired he decided to bail out because he was afraid he was going to crash the plane. But if that was the case, did he have a co-pilot?
Mr. Henry, you got to back it way down.
Did he have a co-pilot?
No, hold on for a minute. You're talking about my father. So back it way down.
Did he have a co-pilot?
Yes, he did.
Was the co-pilot okay?
I don't know. What's that got to do with it? If you're looking at men on the wing...
Okay, so the little green men on the wing were going to destroy the plane.
I'm saying I don't believe in gremlins, I don't believe in witches, but do you take the chance? My father didn't take the chance. I have used that my entire life as my guidance. If I think I can suck a witch I guess you don't get it, do you?
No, I guess I don't, although I do honor your father's service to our country, and he bailed out of the B-17. I suppose it crashed?
You can't, no pilot.
Okay. So they lost a B-17, and the men were fine.
The men were picked up by a patrol plane, yeah.
All right, can you hold on?
Sure.
Am I alone here? His father was flying a B-17 WW-2. He sees gremlins on the wing. Now, which is very common. If you know anything about pilots, especially pilots that flew long distances, and especially in World War II, the pilots would complain they were seeing things because they didn't have any sleep. And they saw what they called little men, little green men on the wings. A lot of pilots would report gremlins. They were seeing them. This man's telling me his father believed gremlins were screwing with the engine, and we all saw the Twilight Zone. That Twilight Zone episode was based upon real reports of gremlins during World War II, where these guys were seeing things. This guy's father bailed out of a flying fortress with 9 other crew members, watched that thing go into the Pacific, because he was afraid the little green man was going to get the engine messed up. And now he's saying, don't fly on Halloween, you'll suck a vampire into your engine. All right, 1-800-449-8686. This is The Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show. On the line with me is Art Griego. We're talking about the Singapore air jet that went down. And the last thing we heard was that there are some, 65 people who were killed in this crash. And you are basically saying, Art, that it's dangerous to fly on Halloween.
Yeah, it's dangerous, Phil, because we've got statistics that prove 37% more fatalities in air disasters occur than the rest of the year. And I don't think...
Yeah, but you're also saying there's a possibility that we're going to get goblins, witches...
I am trying to make sure that air travel is as safe as possible. If a pilot believes that he's going to suck a goblin or whatever into the... You know, I don't know what is so difficult...
If a pilot believes he's going to suck a goblin into the engine, should he be flying?
If he's a good pilot, yes, sir.
All right, here's Tampa on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Well, you know, Mr. Griego, I don't understand. If you're a pilot, how could a rational adult...
Are you a pilot?
It doesn't matter if I'm a pilot. I'm a caller asking a question here.
I asked him the same question, and he said, you asked me if I was a pilot.
You're not a pilot. This guy in Tampa's not a pilot. How could you guys understand what we face?
Well, let me ask you this. Today, these people died. It's Halloween. You say you have some statistics. And all that makes sense up until the point you're talking about goblins and witches. That doesn't make sense.
What doesn't? If a pilot believes... I just got done telling you about World War II. They thought there were gremlins on the wing. You going to tell them they're wrong?
They're wrong. I mean,
are you
there's
be the
no
guy,
such thing.
That's
nonsense.
Are you going to be the guy to walk up to them and tell them... you're not seeing things out on the wing.
No, what airline do you fly for?
No, I used to fly commercially. I flew for Curtis Air out of Florida for about five years, but I'm basically a private pilot, and I do private jumps.
Do they do psychological testing on pilots?
And what are you trying to say now?
No, I'm asking
question. No, it's a good question the guy's asking. If a guy believes he's going to suck a goblin... Into it.
I'm not going to be the guy. We take a medical exam, and I'll tell you something. A lot of pilots are Vietnam veterans, and a lot of I'm not going to be the guy who's going to talk to these great veterans of our armed forces and tell them they're nuts.
No one's saying that. I just asked, do pilots have to take a psychological exam?
We take a medical exam, yes, sir.
You're saying medical exam?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I mean, do you have fit for duty? Is that something that they look into your background? I mean, because what I'm hearing here is I'm hoping to God that we don't have pilots up in the air flying airliners to think that there's a potential of sucking a goblin into the engine.
We don't have that kind of testing for private pilots.
So it's possible.
What you're saying is that it's common for pilots, airline pilots, to believe these things.
To specifically believe what?
Well, you were saying earlier that these goblins and witches on Halloween is something the pilots are afraid of. Are you saying that's representative of the pilot community or just the people you flew with?
Well, if a representative of the pilots that I know, yeah.
All right, well, maybe we're now beginning to get a picture.
And what is that supposed to mean?
Well, I'll come right out and say it if the guy in Tampa doesn't want to. You and your pals are a little goofy if you think that...
Hold on for a minute, Phil. I fly with guys that fought for this country.
I'm not disrespecting their service to the country. But you just heard the man say, you're flying with guys who believe that goblins could get sucked up into a jet turbine, or a witch, or a vampire, or in the case of your father,
Watch it. You're talking about my dad.
I'm simply saying your father believed there were little green men on the wing of his B-17, and he bailed out of his plane, right?
Yeah. Okay, what are you guys saying? Spit it out.
Do they do drug testing at least?
If you're saying that my old man was on drugs, it was World War II, okay? And I don't know what the problem you guys are having. I'm saying that if it's possible a pilot is fearful that there could be some suckage on Halloween night, why not let the guy ground the craft, give the night off?
Because you have air travelers, because you have schedules, because you have people who've bought tickets, because you have a perfectly fine aircraft that's been checked out, FAA regulated, NTSB regulated, everybody knows where everybody's going, pilots trained. Why ground aircraft on Halloween? Why?
Because you've got pilots up there who may not feel safe.
And why don't they feel safe?
I told you. What?
How would the management of the company that you were working for, how if you
every Halloween, me and my buddies spend the day at
goblins.
The Spitfire Bar. What? How would management think if I believed in goblins?
Yes.
I think they'd be all right with that. But I
But
we spend the day at the Spitfire Bar in Santa Monica worrying about all the planes in the sky, just trying to calm down.
That's good. So you guys are sitting there having a few pops, huh?
Trying to calm down, yeah.
All right, sir. Thanks for your call. Here is Richmond on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I got a question about why is it you're not allowed to ask whether or not a pilot is mentally stable or not if he believes that he's going to suck a witch into his engine. I think that's a perfectly valid question to be asked by anyone, whether it's a veteran, whether they flew in World War One,
World War II,
guys, whatever.
They saw gremlins on the wing. Now you're going to call those guys crazy?
They were hallucinating.
Oh, hallucinating. That's you can't allow somebody to fly a plane if they hallucinate. And I think if you've got a pilot that's hallucinating and think there's something on his wing, I think it's time for him to step down and get out of the cockpit.
That's what my father did.
Yeah, but he took nine other people that maybe didn't see the same thing that he did. I think your father was a mental case.
Sir, that's my father. Please have some respect.
Well, and I don't give me that respect, baloney, just as a defense for a silly argument. You're telling me that it's okay for somebody to jump out of a plane because he thinks he sees something out the window. That's nuts. And I don't care whether your father was in World War II or whatever. That's just plain
crazy.
Let
me tell you something. My father said he saw little green men. He saw little green men.
I don't think he may have seen them, but there wasn't any there. Do you believe there were green men on the wing?
If my father said there were.
Well, they weren't. I can tell you right now.
You don't even know my dad. You weren't in that plane. How do you know?
Because there is no such thing as little men, green men on the wings of planes flying at 500 miles an hour. And if you believe that, you have no business flying a plane or driving a car or operating machinery of any kind.
Let me ask you a question. What about my argument about Halloween?
I think it's a silly argument. I don't think Halloween has anything to do. Halloween's on the 31st.
If a pilot is afraid of some kind of something supernatural getting sucked into his engine.
Then there's more pilots as big as your father out there flying a plane that shouldn't be flying a plane.
And that's the point I've been trying to make.
You're trying to make that too?
Yeah. If a pilot doesn't want to fly on Halloween for fear he's going to suck a vampire into his engine, then he should be grounded. He should have immediate psychological testing. He probably needs a vacation. And, you know.
Well, I asked the question early on in the hour, are you a pilot? You said no. This gentleman in Richmond, are you a pilot? No, you're not.
No. But
okay,
I can drive a car, and if I drive a car and see those things, I have no business driving a car. Being a pilot
you're not going to get a vampire sucked into your engine at 60 miles an hour. But
I see, but you're going to get a vampire sucked in.
Oh, now you're laughing at me.
Yeah, okay. It's because it's funny.
All right, thank you. Hold on. All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. On the line with us is Art Griego, who believes that they shouldn't have been flying that Singapore airliner on Halloween because a vampire could get sucked into the turbine. It's the Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show, as we continue this really bizarre conversation here with Art Griego, who is a pilot, private pilot from Santa Monica, talking to us about the Singapore Airjet that went down and how they shouldn't have been flying. You made a comment earlier. You stop in the middle of the day and think about the Egypt Air crash?
Yes, I do.
And what do you think?
I told you, Phil. I think often about the Egypt Air crash.
Yeah, but you said you were stopping.
I work, and I'm trying to get something done at work, and my mind will be a billion miles away, and all of a sudden I'll stop and I'll think of Egypt Air. And I said to you earlier, I said, you know, I'd say to myself, why were they flying on Halloween? That's the only question. Why? They could have been flying any other day.
Are you telling me that the Egypt Air jet went down because it might have sucked a gremlin into its engine or something?
I didn't say that, did I?
You're saying, why did they fly on Halloween?
I'm saying there is a possibility that flying on Halloween is dangerous.
That flying on Halloween will get a gremlin sucked into an engine.
I don't know, but that's what some pilots believe.
Okay, here is Las Vegas on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Yes.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Yes, I am a commercial 727 captain for a major airline.
God bless you.
I have an ATP, type rated 727, left seat pilot. I must say that...
Do you experience these fears?
No. In fact, I feel that it's a mockery to my profession to even profess such fears among pilots. We do not, as a commercial airline pilot, even regard such a fear we don't even think about it.
You don't think about it, and yet are you going to sit there telling you don't know of other pilots who are frightened of the possibility?
Sir, I have flown with hundreds of pilots as an airline pilot, and no one, not once, have we ever discussed the possibility of a little green man on the wing or a gremlin or goblin being sucked in the intake of one of our turbines.
All right, can you comment on something then? This was 3 years ago, and it was at a major airport, I will not say. A pilot who was about to board a 747, he was a member of the crew, that was the flight deck crew. He is wearing a Roman Catholic priest collar. I asked him why. He said because of his fear of some kind of vampire.
What, was this Halloween?
It was Halloween night, yeah.
Okay, and this was a major airline.
Yes, sir. I will not comment which one for obvious legal reasons, but...
Yeah, because they could sue you?
Mr. Henry, I won't comment on the legality. I'm just to protect the airline more than anything else.
Okay, so a member of the flight deck crew comes on wearing a Roman Catholic priest costume?
Yes, sir.
This is on Halloween?
On Halloween.
Well, sir, he most likely was joining the spirit of Halloween. I can tell you right now that there are so many checks and balances in the aviation system, one of them being
right.
Your own crew. If your crew members suspect
you know what?
Truly believe those things...
Sir, you're okay, it's better now.
Okay.
Your phone was correct. Yeah.
If one of the crew members truly believes that you truly believe those things, what? They would have you grounded in an instant.
Believe what, specifically?
Believe that you believe that there are gremlins and goblins that could actually get sucked into an engine.
All right.
They would have you grounded. Your first officer would call up the chief pilot, and he would say, hey, this guy's nuts, this is what he's telling me, and they would ground you.
But you don't know that pilot, so you can't say for sure.
Sir, I can
tell
you.
Wait a minute. What pilot would want that guy sitting behind him as an engineer or sitting next to him as a co-pilot?
None of them. Not a one.
What if he was good otherwise?
What if he was what?
What if he otherwise was okay?
Well, if he's believing that gremlins and goblins could get sucked in the aircraft, he's not otherwise okay. We do not allow, we have a check and balance in the crew environment where if there is something wrong with someone, whether it's a physical condition or a mental condition,
right.
We stop the flight there.
Okay.
It will not even go.
Well, what do you mean? You'll find the nearest airport and
well, if
land?
It becomes,
or...
Well, absolutely.
You're telling me you're flying and a guy says, I see a gremlin on the wing, you're going to drop down right there?
No, I'm not
a gremlin on the
that.
Wing.
I think he's saying
that their safety has to be observed at all times, and if some guy thinks they just sucked a goblin into the engine, you got a problem up there.
That's right.
You want to get that guy out of there.
But, you know, he could be saving your life.
Okay, yeah, great.
Sir, I have several thousand hours of flight time.
And you've never heard of such a thing.
And I have never in my life heard such a thing.
All right.
I am a captain on a major airline, big airplanes. I'm not a private pilot. I don't fly the little puddle jumpers around. For me,
well, you don't have to put me down.
I'm not putting you down. I am only saying.
As a matter of fact, Phil, I met three of my flight buddies swore they saw witches and goblins flying around the cockpit window. Now, I will tell you this.
Well, then I tell you what.
Go ahead, sir.
Tell your medical doctor, tell your FAA physician what you just told us, and we'll see if he will give you your medical.
I'm out on the tarmac right now, Phil.
What is that?
We got a chopper ready to go up in.
Yeah, and why?
Let me tell you something. You want to make fun of me? If I go up and we encounter something like that...
Whatever, man. The witch might get into the rotor blades of that helicopter.
Not likely because of the angle.
All right, sir, thank you very much for your call.
All right, now, so hold on. All right, we are airborne now, so...
Where are you?
Out over Santa Monica right now.
So what?
Well, go ahead and say what you want to say. We should have up there with Ben.
Jesus! Let me go to Los Angeles on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am?
Hi, I'm a flight attendant for a major airline. I just worked all day on Halloween. Just got in.
Roger.
And if my captain had said to me, I see a little green man on the wing, or anything like that, I would have said, you know what, we need to take this down. I demand.
Right. And what would happen if he was right? And I'm not saying that I think there are such things, but what if he was right?
He may have believed he was right, but I couldn't. I wouldn't want to take the chance. I mean, you know, yeah. Say, suppose he was
what?
Right. I mean, nobody in the world has ever seen such a thing before.
Absolutely.
Yeah, my father saw that in World War II.
Your father was hallucinating, okay? Where are you now?
I'm on the South Bay right now, Phil, and everything looks clear.
Well, what are you looking for, man? Are you looking for a witch?
You know something? I'm not up in a plane because I don't want to suck it in.
All right, thank you. You don't want to suck what in?
I don't want to suck no witch. I didn't see anything out here, Phil. Right now, we do not see anything that can perform suckage. No witch, no gremlin, goblin, or elf.
Okay, great, man. So there's no elves or goblins, huh?
No. And so that bodes well for a lot of our pilots coming out of us tonight. Paranormal activity on the mill. Zipline 4.
I don't know what he's talking about. Kill this creep. I don't see no witch. Well, okay, all you guys taking off tonight. 1-800-449-868. Hey, you know what we might ask him? Hey, Art?
Yes, sir?
Do you see any fairies?
No, maybe.
Okay. Maybe he's flying the helicopter. Okay, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. I don't know how I got on this site, but I got on this this site the other day on the computer, on the net. And, you know, you can start thinking that you're a pretty stud-like, strapping dude striding the earth. Yeah, I got a radio show. It's successful, nationally syndicated. I'm a stud, you know. You can start thinking that you got a fairly significant pair in your pants. You know what you ought to do? Then you ought to go on this Congressional Medal of Honor website. Man! You know, you go through your life, you know, yeah, took them down. Tech stocks, yeah. I'm the man, I cashed out $10 million, whatever. So I'm on this Congressional Medal of Honor website, and I'm reading this. I'm just like, Jesus. Listen to this. First Lieutenant John R. Fox. Soma Colonia, Italy, December 26, 1944, serving as a member of Cannon Company, 366th Infantry Regiment, 92nd Infantry Division. Now, if any man out there still has a penis over 1 inch when I'm done with this story, you give me a call. Because I want to hear you. I want to hear what you got to say. Anyway, 96, during the preceding few weeks, Lieutenant Fox served with the 598 Field Artillery Battalion as a forward observer. On Christmas night, enemy soldiers gradually infiltrated the town of Soma Colonia in civilian clothes, and by early morning, the town was largely in hostile hands. Commencing with a heavy barrage of enemy artillery at 0400 hours on December the 26th, 44, an organized attack by uniformed German units began. Greatly outnumbered, most of the United States infantry forces were forced to withdraw from the town, but Lieutenant Fox and some other members of his observer party voluntarily remained on the second floor of a house to direct defensive artillery fire. Now, check this out. At 0800 hours, Fox reported the Germans were in the streets and attacking in strength. He then called for defensive artillery fire to slow the enemy advance. As the Germans continued to press the attack toward the area that Lieutenant Fox occupied, he adjusted the artillery fire closer to his position. Finally, he was warned that the next adjustment would bring the deadly artillery fire right on top of his position. After acknowledging the danger, Lieutenant Fox insisted that the last adjustment be fired, as this was the only way to defeat the attacking soldiers. Later, when a counterattack retook the position from the Germans, Lieutenant Fox's body was found with the bodies of approximately 100 German soldiers. Fox's gallant and courageous actions at the supreme sacrifice of his own life contributed greatly to delaying the enemy advance, etc., etc. Guy won a Congressional Medal of Honor. Most of these are posthumous, by the way, because to get the Congressional Medal of Honor, you can't live. Check this out. March 23, 1945, Speyer, Germany. When the tank on which he was riding received heavy bazooka and small arms fire, Sergeant Carter voluntarily, this is Edward A. Carter, he voluntarily attempted to lead a three-man group across an open field. Within a short time, two of his men were killed and the third seriously wounded. Continuing on alone, he was wounded five times and he finally forced to take cover. As eight enemy riflemen attempted to capture him, Sergeant Carter killed six of them, captured the remaining two. He then crossed the field using as a shield his two prisoners, from which he obtained valuable information concerning the disposition of enemy troops. Sergeant Carter's extraordinary heroism was an inspiration to his officers. He won the Congressional Medal of Honor. Anybody out there with a penis any bigger than an inch, you let me know. Here's a dude here. Staff Sergeant Reuben Rivers, for extraordinary heroism in action during 15 through the 19th November 1944 in Gubling, France. Though severely wounded in the leg, Sergeant Rivers refused medical treatment and evacuation, took command of another tank, and advanced with his company at Gubling the next day. Repeatedly refusing evacuation, Sergeant Rivers continued to direct his tank's fire at enemy positions through the morning of the 19th of November 44. At dawn, Company A's tanks began to advance towards Bogotrov, but were stopped by enemy fire. Sergeant Rivers, joined by another tank, opened fire on the enemy tanks, covering Company A as they withdrew. While doing so, Sergeant Rivers' tank was hit, killing him and wounding the crew. Staff Sergeant Rivers' fighting spirit and daring leadership were an inspiration to his unit and exemplify the highest traditions of the military service. All three of these guys won a Congressional Medal of Honor. Oh, and one more thing. They were all black. All three of them African Americans, which means there's some guy out there going, God, man, why'd you have to tell me that? I was just starting to enjoy those stories. These three guys, they won the Congressional Medal of Honor and they had to wait like 50 years to get it. They're all dead. So they all got it posthumously, I think. And get a load of that. I like the one guy that crossed the field using two German soldiers as his shield. And then he got information out of them. And they were probably looking at him going, this is a white man's war. What are you doing here? There's one other guy here that, like, this dude is a stud, man. I got to find this guy's thing because he still lives out in La Quinta. He lives out in La Quinta, California, and he's like 85 years old. This guy is like out there, man. Check this out. Mitchell Page, rank and organization. He was a platoon sergeant, U.S. Marine, Solomon Islands. While serving with a company of Marines in combat against Japanese forces, Solomon Islands, October 26, 42, when the enemy broke through the line directly in front of his position, Sergeant Page, commanding a machine gun section with fearless determination, continued to direct the fire of his gunners until all of his men were killed or wounded. Alone, against the deadly hail of Japanese shells, he fought with his gun, and when it was destroyed, took over another gun, moving from gun to gun, never ceasing his withering fire against the advancing hordes until reinforcements finally arrived. Then, forming a new line, he dauntlessly and aggressively led a bayonet charge, driving the enemy back and preventing a breakthrough in our lines. Well, okay, I don't know about you, but I'm fairly shriveled up by now. So tell me all about your life. Can you check that out? And this guy's still alive. He's out in La Quinta, plays golf out there. My father-in-law has met him and, like, I think, you know, plays cards with the guy. I mean, everything after that's got to be gravy, right? The guy led a bayonet charge against Japanese with a thing and he didn't have, and the guys were dead, and he went from gun to gun. I read something about this guy. He'd prop dead guys up and fire from the position. Then he'd make them think that there were like six guys there when they were all dead. And now the cat's kicking it, playing golf. So I guess we could free up the lines to fire if there's any guys out there with a penis left over an inch, but probably it's not worth doing it. Anyway, 1-800-449-8686. I did want to mention to you all one other little Halloween story here. Our eldest guy, Nick, has to read The Raven in his class. You know The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe? So the other night he says, I want to read this to you guys. Tell me what you think of it. I said, okay. And he starts reading The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. So there's all six of us there, and he's giving this little presentation, and he's reading it like a teenager. Said the Raven, nevermore, tapping on my window, tap, tap, tapping on my windows. Quote the Raven, nevermore. Oh, Raven, what are you doing here? And he's pointing up to the right side of him, and I'm listening to this, and I'm going, why are you looking up there? Because the Raven's up there. I got to look at the Raven. I got to make eye contact with the Raven. Oh, okay. Quote the Raven, nevermore. Tap, tap, tapping. Lenore, then the Raven. What are you doing, Raven? You're bugging me. You're bumming me out, Raven. You know, so he's doing this kind of a read. So the end of the thing, I go, okay. What'd you think? All right, well, let me ask you a question, man.
Yeah?
What were you looking up there? Because the Raven's up at the door. Okay, what was he feeling? What was Edgar Allan Poe feeling when he wrote that? Well, now this is a teenager you're asking this question of, so immediately he feels as if he's being zeroed in on. He goes, he was angry? Yeah, he might have been angry. What else?
Confusion?
Yeah, confusion. What had just happened to him?
Because the Raven is about the death of his wife, Lenore. Edgar Allan Poe wrote this about his wife, who had died. Nevermore. He would see her nevermore.
So what else was he feeling?
He was sad.
Sad! Yes, he was sad. So when you read it, man, you don't want to go, hey, Raven, what are you doing? Knock, knock, knocking on my door. Figure you're reading it like Yogi Bear.
Hey, boo-boo, quote the Raven, nevermore.
Just read the thing like he's sad. Poor kid, man. You know, it's like, man, 14, 15, 16 years old. These dudes, all of a sudden you ask them, what are you doing, man?
Nothing.
You know, because they automatically know you're zeroing in, man. You're going to kick their butt for some reason. And it was very cool, Nick. So I wanted to say, read it better. Quote the Raven, nevermore. Okay, 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.